The following lecture was delivered at the 17th Annual National Jewish Retreat in Palm Desert, California, a project of the Rohr Jewish Learning Institute. We hope you enjoy it. We encourage you to visit jretreat.com for information on upcoming retreats. Rabbi Mordechai Farkash now presents his lecture, Honoring Elderly Parents.
Surprisingly, to me at least, it was, I am involved in areas of Jewish law, not only for my own community and myself. That's what I spend some of my day is to write and to elaborate discussions in Jewish law, mainly in the area of halacha. And sometimes there is very surprising questions which come up from colleagues, from friends, community members. This one was completely caught me by surprise, completely unexpected. This goes back maybe 15 years ago. Elderly couple in my community. When I say elderly, I mean they were elderly in age, in elderly in a way of making their way to synagogue. And they were, I would consider them, you know, my grandparents, maybe even elder than that. Came over to me and they said, Rabbi, we have an important question to discuss with you. Give us an appointment. Obviously, right away, come, let's hear. What kind of questions do you have that I can help you? They said, the issue is, the lady says, we took in my mother into our house. This couple was older than 70, okay? They took in their mother into their house, and it seemingly doesn't work out. It worked for a little while, but now it doesn't work out. What should they do? And then it's when I realized, as I say, it dawned on me, it's 15 years, so since then it became more common and more obvious. The amazing blessing that our generation has, which we call in Hebrew, Arichut Yamim. Arichut Yamim means long life, which is tremendous. People's lives are qualitated, long, and live long. People celebrate. It's not so uncommon to celebrate a 100th birthday for a mother, for a father. It's not such a surprise. It's still very special. And this blessing brings with that a challenge. And the challenge is, I know my responsibility as the mitzvah that everybody is familiar with, and this is kabed et avicha ve'et imecha, honor your father and mother, which is the fifth of the Ten Commandments. It is being repeated again in the Torah in different formats, as we're going to discuss in a moment. And this mitzvah is now confronting me with the following challenge. I am torn between my responsibility to my parents and being the one who is still dealing with expecting kavod and honor for my own children. Needing to be kind of working on two worlds, my family and my parents, meaning my children, my wife, and my parents. But when you get this question from a respectful community member, which I look up to them as, you know, very nice, decent, organized couple, and you realize that this is actually a challenge. Long life is becoming a challenge. Perhaps this is going to become the hot topic that we're all going to have to deal with. Interestingly, a very short time afterwards, I was traveling to Atlanta for a simcha, for a celebration, and the rabbi in Atlanta asked me to speak to his community. And while I was still being in the topic, I said, you know what, I'm going to talk to your community, but this is the topic. Great, go for it. And I'm not sure if anybody's here from Atlanta, but apparently in this community there are more than one, a number of families which their parents live actually in South Africa. and some of them in Australia, and some of them are in Israel. And they have to struggle between staying home, taking a very long flight. What do you do and how do you do? And what is the right thing to do in such a case? This is the topic of discussion. If I may, let me start with, first of all, what is the challenge of this mitzvah? So I mentioned the challenge of us, meaning the children of our parents, having to kind of juggle between the two worlds, our own families and our parents. But the challenge goes even further. And this is what I learned from my own parents when they took care on their parents. Matter of fact, tonight is my grandfather's yahrzeit, and one of the biggest impressions that my parents left in my life was when they took in my grandparents, my father's parents, for over 3 years into their apartment in Jerusalem. So let it be in memory of my Zayda, today's yahrzeit, Reb Aaron Gershon of blessed memory. The struggle is not just us, the children, but really the question and what goes in the core of the question is to understand what our parents are dealing with. And I'm coming from, again, from an halachic perspective. I'm not a psychologist, but this is what is clear, the way Judaism defines the idea of a parent. A parent is obviously the one who provides to his children. That's the nature of a parent, wanting to give, to love, to share, to provide. That's what we are. And now imagine one day, suddenly there's a whole, in Hebrew they call it hamahapach. Mahapach means a transformation. What happens is, from that point on, I'm going to be a recipient from my children, not anymore a giver. Consciously, but more even subconsciously, is that feel that a parent has in his mind, that I am now standing to be provided and supported by my own children, is very, very difficult and challenging. And they share it. I speak to my own congregants and colleagues. When those who have the conscious issue in their mind and they understand that, they are happy to share it. And when I realized that that's what we're dealing with is when I was able to delve into halacha, into Jewish law, and to try to figure out how we're going to deal with that. So again, it is the struggle between us being parents while we are still children. It is a struggle of realizing that those parents that we are to provide are personally going through a tremendous challenge of not anymore just being givers, but rather getting into the world of so-called receivers. I was amazed once studying the work of the Shalah. Shalah was one of the great Talmudists and Kabbalists, Rabbi Yeshaya Levi Horvitz, a very early sage buried in Tiberias. And I noticed in his book, not necessarily on the subject of honoring parents, a commentary to the Chumash. He writes, Jacob is coming down to Egypt and he meets his son Yosef after 22 years. What is the first words he says, which the Torah records? Amuta apam, I'm ready to die, achrei ra'oti panecha, after I saw you. And Rashi tells us, what do you mean you're dying? Life is just starting. You wanted to see your son, he's here. Rashi has an insight, you know, I thought I'm out of this world and I'm not even going to earn the world to come because maybe I'm guilty what happened to my son, at least you are alive. So now I'm going to die once. I'm only going to die when I die in this world. But in the world to come, I know I'm okay. The Shalah, you know what he says? That when Jacob saw Joseph, and you realize what happens from this moment on. He's the boss. He owns Egypt. He tells me where to live. He tells me when to come, where and how. You know what, God? Must speak. Amuta apam. I think I'm ready to go. And when you see it in the eyes of such a sage like the Shalah, you're like, whoa. So I guess it's not so surprising to understand what is it that we are dealing with when our parents are becoming our recipient. This is the perspective of Jacob. And he actually mentions the famous line, and this is, again, a sage of more than 400 years ago, and he says, as people say, this is his words, but he says it in Hebrew, obviously, that one parent can take care on 10 children and 10 children cannot take care on one parent. He writes those words. This is not a modern-day statement. To obviously approach the subject, what does the Torah mean when it says, "Kabeit et avicha ve'et imecha"? Honor your father. How do we to understand the word honor? Honor, first of all, has nothing to do with love. So when you tell your parents, I love you and I love you, it's wonderful, but that's not the mitzvah, okay? It might be the mitzvah of love your fellow Jew, or put it in any other perspective of a mitzvah, has nothing to do with the wording of the fifth commandment, Kabeid et avicha v'temecho, honor your father, Romana. But this is the words, fifth commandment. A few portions later, that same commandment changes in the book of Exodus, Shmot. The same commandment now turns him into a new definition. Ish imo ve'aviv tira'u. You should, each man, each person shall revere, respect his mother and father. So the Torah switches from kavod, from honor, to reverence. So you obviously wonder, what is honor and what is reverence? For that, we have our tradition known as the words of the sages. There is an old subject in the Talmud, in a tractate called Kiddushin, that the Gemara spends several pages to discuss and to describe this topic of honoring and revering parents. And when it comes to honor parents, the Gemara says, Eizu kavod, what is considered honor? Simple. Make sure they have what to eat. Make sure they have what to drink. Make sure they have clothes to wear. And they are able to be mobilized, meaning they have their outings and they come back to their house. This is it. Nothing about feelings and love and attention. Simple acts. Practical behavior. Conduct yourself respectfully to your father means make sure that he has his needs. This is the definition of the biblical term kabed, which we translate in Hebrew as honor. When it comes to tirau, which means reverence to your parents, at that point the Talmud looks like he's taking a whole different perspective on it. He only tells us what not to do to your parents, nothing about what reverence represents in action. It's all certain types of action that by abstaining from them, you're expressing your respect and your reverence to your parents. If you, father or mother, have their own designated seat around the dining room table, make sure you don't sit there. Your father is never being referred to by his name, but rather as dad, Abba, father. It's all about what not to do in order you should not seem disrespectful to them. So what is it? The way the halachic authorities are defining the term mora, tirau, is a feel of attitude. You're looking up to your parent, to your father and your mother. You give them the recognition as special people. people who are perhaps being respected, even though we use the word respect in kavod. Kavod means action. Here I don't need you to do anything. I just want you to look to your parents and make sure that they feel respected by you. How can I make them feel? What am I to do? If I'm giving them food, you told me I'm honoring them. The Torah writes a second paragraph, revere them. Therefore, our sage just says, yes, I can tell you what you should not do. And when you're going to abstain from those particular actions, they're going to realize that you consider them as special individuals, respectful individuals. This is kavod, and this is morah. So again, there is two aspects, kavod and morah. Now, and here it gets interesting. In the Chumash, the fifth commandment is honor your father and mother. In the book of Leviticus, Parshat Kedoshim, the commandment is revere your mother and father. Not going to get in now why here is father mentioned before mother. When it comes to respect, mother is before father. There is a commentary on that too by our sages. But what I want you to think about, that in even though that in the commandments the emphasis is on the action and honor, when you look in the Shulchan Aruch, the code of Jewish law, even though it's called the laws of honoring parents, it initiates the discussion about how we are to be respectful to our parents, what we should not do, and only afterwards comes what we should do. And when you see that organized style of the code of Jewish law, you obviously understand there is some lesson here. That itself is a teaching to us. And what our sages tell us and what commentaries are telling us is very important. That the Torah expects you, before you even honor them and give them and provide them and ensure that they have what to eat and what to drink, they feel respected by you. So the tirau, the reverence, comes before even the honor. And why is it so important? The Talmud uses an expression regarding a child who gives his father. It's not an expression, but rather a scenario of a child who provides his father with the ultimate delicacy. And each one has his own taste, some like sushi, some like well-done steak. The Talmud calls it the gebrotin akachka. You know what a gebrotin akachka in Yiddish means? Ah, well-done bird. And he's having his father or mother in his house, and he provides them with that oif shomein, this fatty, juicy piece of chicken. Isn't that a great, tremendous of kavod, of honor? Instead of just giving them open a tuna can, he makes sure that they have something beautiful and a delicacy. But the Talmud says when he gives them that piece of chicken, he turns to his father and he says, come on, get your teeth going on it. He doesn't say, Dad, come, let's have dinner. He says, no, try to work your teeth, knowing that at a certain age, your teeth becomes a little more challenging to work into a piece of chicken. Says the Talmud, you lost the mitzvah of honor. It didn't work. I'm not happy with you. Because it's not what you provide them, it's how you provide them. It's the approach. Meaning, it's the morah, the reverence, which comes even before the kavod, before the honor. So going back to our dealing with our aging parents, it's not only what we give them in every area of this special mitzvah of honoring parents, but especially when it comes with the challenge I mentioned earlier, what they go through subconsciously and sometimes consciously about their change. Not their physical change, which is an issue on its own, not their mental change. I'm talking about the change from being a provider to a receiver. At that very same time, the important aspect of this mitzvah called honoring parents is to remember that here the emphasis must be of reverence and respect before you even provide them. How am I going to introduce to them what I'm giving? They don't even have to know that you gave it to them. Okay? And maybe this is exactly what they want. They know that they need help, but they don't want to know it's their child who is involved in helping them. So it doesn't have to be with this whole presentation. As parents, we like to give our children, you know, with a presentation. Oh, I gave you a birthday present. Come in, welcome. I love you so much. Look what I bought you. Your parents might never know that you gave them something. This is where respect is penetrated and infused with this earlier mitzvah called mora, reverence. You might not get a thank you. They might even be frustrated at you. But it's worth it to have that connection to them and naturally at the same time to God, because the Talmud does make a very opening statement in this whole discussion that I consider honor to parents as a personal honor to me. I am a partner with your parents for you being in this world. You honor them, I feel honored at the same time, simultaneously. So you're not going to get a thank you. Don't worry. It's all written down. Everything is recorded. Nothing is in vain. When the thank you is going to have to come, maybe 2 generations later, you will get it. The blessing is there. But to be able to do the mitzvah properly, that is what the Torah teaches us, these 2 concepts, kavod and mora. Let the kavod, let the providing for them be infused with mora, which is reverence and respect. Where does the issue really start? When we begin dealing with parents who become very difficult. And I'm not talking about younger children, youngsters who think they have problems with their kids, with their parents. This is a separate issue. This is, you know, we're all dealing with. We're always guilty. But I'm talking about especially when it's really challenging, because unfortunately, their abilities, their mental ability, their physiological ability is in a state which they cannot help themselves, rather than doing things and saying things which are hurtful. So what do you do then? Sometimes it goes even further. They need care. Who should be the one caring? Should I see them down and tell them, you gotta take that medicine? God forbid you're gonna hurt yourself and fight with them, and sometimes do even worse than just telling them and screaming at them, or let someone else hire a nurse, let them do it, put them in a home. Let me tell you a story, a Talmudic story, okay? This is again in the very same tractate called Kiddushin. So the Gemara teaches us Rav Asi. Rav Asi is a Talmudic sage of Babylonia. Had this elderly mother. Once she told them, I want jewelry. Idira Pan made jewelry for her. Subsequently, the mother said, I want a husband. Rav Asi replied, I will look for one for you. She then said, I want one as handsome as you. Rav Asi heard those words from his mother. He decided, I don't think I can be around here for much longer. He left Babylonia and he made his way to Eretz Israel. He made Aliyah. Next thing he knows, he heard that his mother is coming after him to Israel. He came before the great rabbi of Israel by the name of Rabbi Yochanan. And he asked Rabbi Yochanan, what is the law? May you one leave the land of Israel and go abroad? So Rabbi Yochanan replied, no, it's forbidden. You know, once you're in Israel, there's very exceptional conditions that you're allowed to leave the country. If you have to find a wife, if there's no sustenance for you, if there's a better yeshiva, There is a Rebbe somewhere that you can't get in Israel. But other than that, once you live in Israel, it's very challenging to live. And he's asking his rabbi, can I leave? He says, no. So Rav Asi says, no. My question is, can I go out to meet my mother? What is the law? To make a long story short, before he had a chance to figure out what the law is, he received news that his mother passed away. But there is a story of a rabbi, a Talmudic sage, who left his mother, made aliyah, just because he realized that he can't handle her, and if she's asking a husband as handsome as her own son, it's troubling. Okay, every story becomes a source of law. Comes the Rambam, Maimonides, and he qualifies that story into law. And what does he say? The Rambam writes, "Mishenitrefa da'ato shel aviv o shel imo," somebody that his father or mother became, let's call it, mentally disabled. "Mishtadel linhog imahem kefi da'atam ad sheyerucham aleihem." He tries to stay with them and to assist them until God will have mercy on them and they will recover. However, ואם אי אפשר לו לעמוד בפני שנשתתו ביותר, but if he can't bear it anymore, it became too difficult. In their state, it's a situation that there is no way he can treat, he can deal with, he can face. יניחם וילך לו, let him leave. ויצבו אחרים, ויצב אחרים להניגם כראוי להם, and tell others, organize someone else to take care of them. This is what the Rambam says, which is, by the way, qualified the Shulchan Aruch in the God of Jewish law. And the Rambam does not write anything on his own. So if somebody studies this Rambam, this paragraph in Maimonides, which he says, if the parent came to a situation that they are so mentally challenging that you cannot take care of them, leave. You turn to the Rambam, where did you take it from? What is the Rambam going to tell you? I just studied. Tractate Kiddushin. A story, Rav Asi, he did it, and he's not being in any way challenged for his behavior, so I guess it's the right thing to do. Otherwise, why is the Talmud tell us the story? That's usually how Maimonides is being studied, right? You have to find where is the source, and once he has a source, perfect. So far, so good. However, you studied this Rambam. If you studied Rambam, and I'm sure many of you did study Rambam, in the original text of the Rambams, from time to time, there is a comment of one which we can consider him as an opponent to the Rambam. He lived about his same generation. His name was Rabbi Avraham ben David. The acronym for it is Ra'avad. And if you look in a classic Rambam, you're going to find Rambam, Maimonides, and the Ra'avad, who has something to say against him. No, incorrect. And usually what they would do in the world of study in yeshiva is to try to figure out what does the Ra'avad want from the Rambam, and how did the Rambam resolve the question and the challenge what the Ra'avad is asking upon him. In this very halacha in Rambam, the Ra'avad makes the following footnote. And what does he say? He says, absolutely not. Three words. If he lives, who is going to watch over them? Says the Ra'avad. Lemi etzave leshomro. Who is going to watch? What do you mean you live? And I'm asking you, okay? You are the intelligent crowd here. You studied the Rambam. I shared with you the source of the Rambam. You see the Ra'avad questioning the Rambam. What would be your response to the Ra'avad? I don't understand what you're asking. The Rambam didn't make it up. The Rambam saw it in the Talmud, right? Rav Asi conduct himself in that manner. What are you screaming? And in a way, what do you mean, who is going to tell to watch? Maimonides also made it clear. You're not going to leave before you're going to appoint somebody lehanigam. You speak Hebrew? What is lehanigam? To order them, to guide them, to take care of them. So what are you asking? What kind of question is it? So I will tell you, my dear friends, honestly, a number of years, I was carrying that Rambam and the Ravad in my pocket. I was told once by one of my teachers in Montreal, not every question needs an answer. And if there is no answer, don't throw out the question. Put it in your pocket. That's why you have packets in your pants. My teacher, Rabbi Gringlas of blessed memory, he said, you have a shaila, lega reini kashina. Put it in your pocket, and one day you're going to find the answer. I study Rambam. I see the footnote of the Ravad. My question is like, all of you have the same question now, right? Everybody has a question? You have an answer? And the Ravad, can you support his opinion who says not to leave? Not talking emotionally. I'm talking from a perspective of Jewish law. I don't see any issue. And I don't know the answer until one Friday. This goes in the late 90s. I came to Seattle in 94, so this is 98, probably 98. I am visiting Swedish Hospital, which is a hospital in Seattle, which has a special program for treating leukemia patients. And at that time, they used to send from Israel to be treated here. They were famous, the Fred Hutchinson, they were famous for their treatment. Today, we shouldn't need it, but Israel itself, Baruch Hashem, is taking care of themselves. But in the late 90s, there was still, they used to send patients there. And I went to visit, that's what you do. And while I'm coming into one of the rooms, it was Friday morning. Friday, if you go visit someone, you go in the morning. You know, it's, you got to get ready for Shabbos. I'm there Friday morning, and I noticed that in the same room of the Jewish patient I'm visiting, a Jew from Lakewood, New Jersey, is another visitor, somebody who previously was 20 years a rabbi of a congregation in Seattle. He was actually at my wedding, so that's the only time I met him. I got married in New York, and he came because my wife is from Seattle. So, Shalom Aleichem, Kvod HaRav, Reb Moshe, nice. We speak, and those who are familiar know that in the hospital, in the morning, when the doctors are making their rounds, and they go with the whole entourage of those who take training, they come into the room, and they check whatever the patient needs. At that point, usually the visitors will leave the room, let them do their work. As I'm about to leave the room, I noticed that that one who served as a rabbi earlier, is many years older than me, goes over to the charts, which is hanging on the wall, the white cells, the red cells, all the conditions of the patient, and he's reading it very carefully, and his glasses go up and they go down, and he's looking. We walk out of the room, I turn to him and I said, Ramesha, do you know how to read those charts? Do you know what it says there? He grabs me with my hand, and he tells me in Yiddish, Mr. Hayungerov, you're a young rabbi, let me give you a little training. You probably gonna have to visit patients, and you're gonna be in the hospitals. So listen to me. When the nurses come around or the doctor comes around, you stand there by the charts. Let them think that you know what it says and you understand what you read. There's going to be a whole new care on that patient. You know what my response to him was? Rabbi, now I understand an argument between the Ravad and the Rambam. Now it makes sense to me. What are you talking about? So I told him. The Rambam says, you leave your parents. The Ravad says, if you're going to leave, who is going to watch over them? I never understood what the Ravad wants. The Rambam didn't say, leave them and let them go. You leave them and you appoint someone to watch them. So what's the difference? Now I understand. You can have someone hired and paid to take care of your parent. who are physically disabled. But if you're not around, if you're not coming in and reading those charts, if you're not sniffing behind their back, you just take off. I did my duty. Soon Mother's Day arrives, we will come for a visit. If that's what you do, says the Ravad, you can't leave. You can't go. That's what I felt when I had gone through that experience in the Swedish hospital. There are two ways of watching. There is watching physically, caring physically, and then there is being beyond the watchman in making sure that he does his job. But I got to support it to, you know, just by experiencing something like that, it's not enough. I'm sure the Rambam understood it, the Ravid understood it. What you do at that point, you go back to the source and you try to examine carefully what did the Rambam exactly write and what did the Ravad exactly wrote to question the Rambam. And I realized, very simple. You know what the Rambam writes? The Rambam says, this is his words, and now you have someone speaking Hebrew, so he's going to confirm that I'm translating right. The Rambam says, Yenichem ve'yelechlo, right? Leave them, go. Ve'yetzav acherim lehanigam karaui. He should tell others to guide them properly, to care for them properly. Right? Nachon? Perfect. What does the Ravat say? Im yelech, if you go, lemi yetzaveh leshomro. Who are you going to command to watch them? The Rambam never mentioned watching. The Rambam mentioned caring. And you realize they don't even argue. They're talking about two separate needs and two separate responsibilities. There is one thing, lehanigam, to guide them, to care for them, which, as me explained earlier, that falls in under which category? The category of kavod, honoring parents. And that, the Rambam says, not a problem. If your issue is to take care of them, if you have somebody good, you pay them well, they do their job, you don't have to be the one stooping the medicine into their mouths and fighting with them when they don't want to take it, and other types of arguments which usually arises in such situations. The Ravat comes in and says, this is one thing, but what are they going to feel about the fact that they were left in the care of others and no one of their own children is there to watch and to make sure that they are being given the respect which only a child can give to a parent. So, am I going to be stuck there all my life? No. But don't drop the ball. Yes, hire someone. A nursing home might be the one solution for some, not for everybody. Doesn't have to be in your house, but let them feel that there is somebody who cares for them. Let the honor be ensured and secured by knowing that you are sniffing behind their back and you're making sure that the honor is being given. That's what the Ravid is speaking about. It's interesting, the idea of guarding the temple, okay? Guarding the temple. You know there's a mitzvah to guard the temple. Why does the temple in Jerusalem, there were Levites, 21 Levites watching the temple on different corners. And Maimonides says, what is there a need to watch the temple? There is no robbers who ever came to steal anything from the temple. And there were people there throughout the day, you know, the different offerings and sacrifices and services. You know what the Rambam says? Eino dome, you cannot compare a palace with guards around it to a palace who has no guards around it. And not because there is a greater protection on the palace, says Maimonides. Rather, this is how the ultimate respect is given to the temple. What's the respect, he explains? That we never stop thinking about it. The guards on the temple basically represent an idea. What's the idea? The idea is that we, the Jewish people who are represented by those guards, the Levites, our representatives, are basically paying attention to the fact that there is a temple. Give it attention. The temple wants to have the attention. There is somebody who 24/7 thinks about it. Not only when I do my service, not only when I pray, rather, there is always somebody who is there thinking about me. You know what it's called? That's called guarding. So what does it mean practically? What does it mean practically is that if we are in a situation that we're dealing with parents who are in a state of mind that we cannot take care of them, it's kosher 100% according to the halacha to have somebody doing the job of caring for them. It does not need to be the child, as long that you are around. And you're around means that they know, they get the phone calls, the guard knows, the hired individual knows that there is no... I was actually having a community member who lives many years in Seattle, and your mother, who was originally from France, moved to Israel, and she lived and lived and lived. Baruch Hashem, she kept on going, but slowly but surely she became immobile. And she hired a lady to take care of her. And I remember coming before Passover and delivering matzah to this family. And while I came into the house, on the video, on the screen, you see the mother being taken from a living room to a balcony porch in the city of Ashdod. She's sitting in Bellevue, Washington, the daughter, and she has a camera watching the wonderful Filipino lady moving the mother from her room to the porch. Your mother doesn't communicate with her at that point. It's a silent video, but she does not take off her eyes. I wouldn't say 24/7, but the lady knows that somebody keeps on watching. You know, in the laws of kashrut, everybody knows there's the mashgiach. When it comes to a kosher restaurant, a kosher facility, you know how long does the mashgiach need to be there in order to make sure that that facility is kept kosher? How many eyes does the mashgiach need to have, and for how long? What would you say? Obviously, you're getting into a challenge. You look away, and who knows? Something trafe would happen to the kitchen. So you think the Jewish law will require an individual which his entire head is full with eyes. He can see from his front, he can see from his back, and he's fully alert, and he doesn't take one moment off, because every moment is a given catastrophe. Not true. You know what Jewish law calls it? Yotze v'nichnas. Translate. Goes out and goes in. So if he goes out before he comes in, who is responsible on which happens and what happens at the time when he was out? What's the answer? The answer is that the employee inside the facility doesn't know when you're coming in. And he doesn't know how long you're going to be out. And that creates another concept in law called mirtat. You know what mirtat means in Hebrew? Fear. I don't know. He might be here any second. I'm not doing something wrong. The moment I'm going to start mixing the pots, up, that is when the Mashgiach is walking in on me. And that's exactly what we expect with parents. No one needs you to be on the camera 24 hours watching and not taking your eyes off. It's impossible. You have your life, you have your family, you have responsibilities, but the person who is hired, the person who is employed to take care of that elderly parent knows that there is a watching eye, ayin roya. Today, with technology, it's very simple and actually very affordable to create such a communication by having the parent in the house overseas being watched by the child who sees how the nursing caring individual takes care of them. But it's not only to ensure their well-being. It is moira. It is the parent knowing that you never forgot about them. Like the temple, no hesach hadas. You never stop thinking what is going on with them, how are they doing, and kind of left them in the hands of a caregiver. That is the accomplishment. And this is exactly what the Ravad tells the Rambam when he says, leave and let somebody else take care of them. And the Ravad says, what do you mean leave? He agrees you can leave. Why does he have to agree? Because the Talmud tells us that that's what you do. And it brings us a story of a sage who did it. I'm not concerned about you giving the care into others' hands. What I am concerned about is that the person who is now entrusted for their care knows that you are watching them. It's interesting that in Jewish law, the expense of providing for your parents, if they have, does not have to come from your pocket. In the Talmud, there is a big debate. Mishelo or Mishel Aviv? Should you be the one responsible to spend on their honor? Should you pay for the bills? Or it should come from their pocket? How far does the Torah go with this mitzvah called kabed, honor? And the conclusion after a long discussion, which is, by the way, a long, interesting discussion in the Tractate of Kiddushin, page 30, 31, if you have a chance, you should study it. The halacha concludes, if the parents have, they are the ones responsible to give for the expenses. You are to facilitate how to spend the money wisely and properly. But you don't have to spend on your own unless they don't have. So then there is a mitzvah of tzedakah. Tzedakah, your parents come before everybody. But it's because of tzedakah, not because of honoring parents. And this leads us to a very important, again, element into this whole concept of kibud av va'em, to realize that honoring comes of their expense. But the reverence and respect, you're the only one responsible for. Which it means as follows. Somebody comes to me and he says, my parents live in South Africa. You know how much is a ticket, Rabbi? Crazy expensive. Now you pay for a ticket, see, $4,000 to go to South Africa. I don't have $4,000. Do I have to travel? What's the answer? Take a boat costs money. What's the answer? Start walking. Start walking. What do you mean start walking? I don't mean literally start walking. You don't have to spend if you don't have, but it does not exempt you from the respect that you have to show them. So figure out how to show them respect without traveling there. But that doesn't become the excuse for morat. That's why it's always important to differentiate between these two commandments in the book of, in the Ten Commandments, and in Vayet Hanan. But at the same time, and I know that time is unfortunately short, like I said, there's so much to discuss about honoring parents, we have sometimes issues that the children are being expected certain things, which in our mind, we feel that we understand that for our benefit and for our families, it is better not to do what our parents want from us. How important is that to listen to what our parents tell us to do? How important is it to listen to them? So if you notice, we spoke about reverence, we spoke about respect. None of the definitions, whether in the Talmud or in Shulchan Aruch, said to listen to them. However, again, it's the same principle. There is not listening, and then there is being disrespectful. You can listen. And listening doesn't mean that you have to accept everything you listen. Since when is listening and agreeing with everything I'm listening, sharing the same cubit? I listen. If God forbid someone comes to me and he starts talking Lashon Hara in my ears, did I violate a prohibition, listening to Lashon Hara? Bad talk? Did I? I did. Okay, but I'm too old to run away. What should I do? The guy sits down on my bench and he doesn't stop shushking to my ear. So what's my solution?
Not to be
huh? Exactly. I hear you, but I don't accept. And at that point, you're good. Not everything which has to do with listening means that you have to accept. So the secret is you can listen to your parents. If there is a true reason not to do what they expect you from do, it's okay not to accept. As long, listen to that, that in the end goal, they're going to be more honored with the decision you made rather than the decision they made. Your father, your mother really don't want you to marry this girl. Do I have to listen to them? Do I have to listen? The answer is, if it's a normal, healthy, good girl for me, I'm not going to listen. I'm not going to follow. But you know what's going to happen? In a couple of years, or in even shorter than that, they're going to be so proud of their daughter-in-law, they're going to thank me for marrying them. So, that you can really be honest with yourself, and usually it's good to counsel it with an objective advisor or someone who has an objective opinion on it, you might do things which they told you not to, and it's kosher, because ultimately that's their kavod. And by the way, it's exactly qualified in Shulchan Aruch, this example of marriage, and also to which yeshiva I want to go. Not because it's funner in that school, but you feel you're going to be more successful. So you're not accepting everything they say in a respectful manner. So why were you allowed to do it? Because let them wait. I know in 1 year, if I come back from that school that I wanted to go, ooh, are they going to be so honored by my decision? So I'm giving it the time, and Allah allows me to consider that. In other words, let's put it this way. It is not just the mitzvah of marriage or the mitzvah of studying Torah is so important that it overrates the mitzvah of honoring parents. No, I'm not saying that. Exactly the opposite. Nothing overrates the mitzvah of honoring parents. It's the honoring of parents which is going to be realized ultimately when you're going to succeed in the Torah you learn, and they're going to be happy with the girl or boy you married. That's when you're going to realize, and they're going to realize their honor. And that's what we're considering. Keep it up.
Please visit myjli.com to learn more about JLI's multiple educational offerings.